I'm giving you back to the world, girl. I'm sending you back from where you came, dame. Giving you back to your mother, lover. I'm giving you back to the world, girl. You deserve each other, baby. I'm sending your clothes back in a sack, Jack. I'm putting you down in your town, clown. Giving you back to your daddy, baddie. I'm giving you back to your world, girl. You deserve each other, baby. You deserve each other, baby.
Baby, baby, baby.
It's the same old story told. You deserve each other, baby.
Baby, baby, baby.
You're cut out from the same mold. I'm returning your kisses, missus. Here's your dreary old tear, dear. I'm giving you back to your past, yeah. Giving you back to your world, girl. You deserve each other, baby.
CITR 101.9 FM. This is the Inkstud Show, the radio show where we talk about comics. Now, before I start my interview with my guest, well, Colin's joining me as the interviewer, guest Rod Philbrandt, I just got to do a couple of PSAs, public service announcements. There's a weird loud noise in here. I hear a loud noise. I don't know what it is.
Aircraft.
It's coming for us. Reminder, people, is if you've been listening to CITR, you know the funding drive is on. It's on. So the Inkstuds, we love our listeners, and we have a stack of books to give away to people that want to give us money. Not us, Inkstuds, but CITR. To donate money to CITR, you can be getting such wonderful things from the $45 and up amounts. The Peanuts Volume 1 hardcover, nice collection from Fantagraphics. Shortcomings just came out in comic stores today. From Adrian Tomine, who will be in town next month, on November 12th, I think, at Sophia Books. Dave Cooper's new children's book, Bagel's Lucky Hat, which is under the name Hector Mumbly, because, well, I don't think he wants parents to look up his actual his artwork.
Oh,
they
dear.
Would be very frightened. Ruto Modan's Exit Wounds, I finally read that magnificent book, Israeli cartoonist. Fabulous, fabulous stuff. Spent by Joe Matt. Basically, 150 pages of him diatribing wonderfully. I love Joe Matt. Dogs and Water by Anders Nilsson. Anders is one of my favorite cartoonists out there. His stuff is gorgeous and sad and wonderful all at once. And Southern Cross by Lawrence Hyde, which I think, if I got my information right, is actually a block print comic from the 50s. It's pretty neat looking. So $45 and up. You donate $60 and you can have two of those books. Donate $100, we'll probably give you four of those books or something. Just call in and donate. As well, my other thing I gotta yak about. Oh yeah, so call 604-822-1242 and talk to the wonderful people there answering the phones. A little joint thing doing with, or just promoting for Vancouver Comic Con. They're hosting a screening of a couple movies, Death Note and Idol, here next Saturday the 20th. And if you want free passes, call Wall of Music's on into the here 604-822-2487, and you can get free passes. I have two free passes to 11:30 screening of Death Note, and two free passes to the 2:15 double screening of Idol and Death Note, including a question answer session with directors Shizuki Kaneko and Norman England. Wow, one name is a lot more exciting than the other name. So call in 822-2487 or call in 822-1242 and give money and ask questions. And if you donate stuff, you'll get free passes too. And the free passes are two tickets. So it's you and a friend. So now I shall turn my head and pay attention to my wonderful guest, Rod Philbrett, who's joining us today. Kind of my Vancouver component, since this is the funding drive, I felt like we should have one of Vancouver's more recognizable cartoonist styles out there, because really, Georgia Strait has more readers than all the comics in the city put together.
Maybe.
Now I am sad.
It's a newspaper. What, you think more people are going to be reading comics than newspapers, Colin?
Yes.
Maybe in Japan.
They should.
Now, you might recognize last week's wonderful cover of Gordon Campbell, the double-headed Campbell, in a mire of toxic goo, I guess. One head there and one head in a utopian green world, which obviously he doesn't really want. He's just lying. How are you doing, Rod?
Good, how are you?
Good. So, when do you start doing comics, and who are you, and what would we recognize your stuff? Dry Shave was your long-running strip that I don't think you do anymore, do you?
No.
No.
Well, actually, I got my start pretty much kind of connected to CITR.
Oh.
Working for Discorder.
Wow.
In the 80s, back in New Wave years. So, probably 84 or 85, I think, I just sent them a strip that I did while I was working another job, a desk job. 9-to-5 job, and I scribbled some shitty little strip out and thought, hey, it's kind of new wave, so I'll send it to Discorder. And actually, I think I sent it to, do you remember that TV show? It was like a video show from...
Soundproof?
Yeah.
Oh, I love Soundproof.
Buzz Miller, yeah.
Yeah, they used to play stuff to like 7 in the morning.
Yeah. I got my first cartoon published anywhere. Actually, on their show, if you can consider that published.
But they held it up to the camera?
Yeah, they did. And I kept doing it, and then I sent in the same character to Discorder. I think I sent, like, 3 strips, not knowing how many you're supposed to send. And it was, like, you know, really crudely done. It was, like, in Marks-A-Lot, fine point Marks-A-Lot, and it bled all over the place, and they ran it. And that's how I pretty much got my start, like, doing, you know, real cartooning, not just illustration and crap for ads.
So you were pretty much a graphic designer beforehand.
Yeah, I was working this really weird job doing designing cute novelty items at this company called Abco Industries.
Abco.
Yeah, and that, it was like this sort of really weird sort of, like, seemed like they were going to close up any minute now, like they're, you know, fly by night. And they had an in-house graphic designer, which was me, but they didn't know how fast you could draw stuff. This stuff, so they'd give me all day to do, like, you know, design like the top of a package of stickers or something like that, and I could do it in 5 minutes. And so I just start cartooning all my shit all day long, you know, and on their dime. And somehow even that proved too stressful, and I ended up quitting. So
they didn't do like vinyl toys or anything.
No, it was all like, you know, stationery for little girls and stuff like that, and pens shaped like corn cobs and wieners and stuff like that. Like, really, just, you know, abysmal.
There's something awesome about that name, though.
Abco Industries, yeah.
It's just so, I don't know, maybe it's the close relation to Acme and the Acme history.
Yeah.
Sounds like something from Roadrunner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You'll be attacked by a corncob pen.
It's a dim memory anyway. So, but anyway, I got into CITR, into Discorder, and it's one of those things, you know, I never knew anybody who worked here or anything like that. Just, you know, that went on for a few years too, I think. 3 or 4.
Were you big into the punk rock new wave scene?
Or? I thought I was. I mean, it seemed like it, but I probably... comparatively wasn't really a lifestyle or anything like that.
I guess
was too young to go to Smiling Buddha and all that stuff, so I kind of missed. I was kind of like the leftovers. I didn't get to be the, you know, the real punk rock cred, you know.
I'm just too young to have been able to go to. I only went to one Commodore show before it closed again, so I understand.
Really? Wow.
L7 and the Melvins.
I played the Smiling Buddha.
See, I remember standing out behind the Commodore when I was 18 listening to X, And wishing that I looked 19. Of course, I didn't. I looked like I was about 12. So.
Zina Cervenka?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the original lineup.
Who, I did not know this until a little while ago, was married to the guy from Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, isn't she still married to that guy?
No, I'm pretty sure they're divorced now.
Which guy?
The Lord of the Ring.
Viggo Mortensen.
Oh.
Yeah.
So he got my punk cred. I'm like, that's cool. Okay. You know. It was a pretty, I'm trying to think of the politically correct word for Lord of the Rings, and I'll leave it alone. I guess I should mention the song that we played. It was Robert Mitchum, You Deserve Each Other. Why Robert Mitchum?
I actually got that CD from my friend Tom Bagley. Do you know him? Calgary cartoonist, does album covers, like for Huevos Rancheros.
Oh, okay. And,
Chicks Dig It cartoon, yeah. He gave me that, just burned a copy of that. I hadn't heard it. It's Robert Mitchum's sort of rockabilly greaser album. He did a Calypso album, which is not really as good as this one.
Robert Mitchum, everyone's...
But as he pointed out, he goes, you can't go wrong fuzz guitars and Robert Mitchum. So.
Inkstud's the only show at CITR you will hear Robert Mitchum.
With fuzz guitar.
With fuzz guitar. Actually, I wouldn't put it past many other shows. I think a show that's on a couple hours before me might play it. I can't remember the name of it, though.
The fuzz guitar Robert Mitchum hour.
That's it.
I'm a loyal listener.
So, Discorder... If Discorder is anything like it is today, you didn't get paid anything for it. So, no. What was the next step?
I guess basically the Georgia Strait switched editors at the time, and I think I had submitted some stuff, and the guy said, "Look, why don't we just cut to the chase, and why don't we just take Wombat, and we'll actually pay you?" And I said, "As long as I don't have to change it, or you know, I think it had improved a little bit. I think I'd actually started drawing with an actual like good felt or." Brush or something at that point, maybe even a pen. But so it got a little better, and I said, as long as I don't have to change anything, and he said, no, that's the whole point. We don't want you to change anything. So that was it. You
know? No, I haven't actually seen any of the Wombat stuff, I don't think. Maybe I have. Describe Wombat.
I don't know where you'd find it. It was basically, I kind of think of it now as basically almost like Harold Head for my generation, as he's kind of the same guy. Like I remember this Harold Head strip that I always loved as a kid where... You know, some uptight white guy's honking at him and telling him, hey, hippie, move your ass. You know, he's in a crosswalk. And he just goes over and he grabs the guy's tie and ties it to the handle of the door handle of the car and leaves this guy with his head sort of stuck in the window like that and just sort of goes, I always wondered what those things were for. You know? And my parents were hippies and they always had this giant Harold Head compendium lying around. And it was actually really influential just in that sort of, you know, I don't know what you call it, rugged individualist sort of malcontent. You know, going against the grain kind of character. So it's kind of weird that I ended up working for the Georgia Strait.
Yeah, Rand Holmes, local cartoonist who had international acclaim. And actually, he, as far as like underground cartoonists go, he's really different from the rest of them because his stuff was a lot different. Like his art was so much better rendered, I guess.
Well, his themes were similar, but the art style was more E.C. Wally Wood, I always thought.
Yeah, Wally Wood was a big influence, I think, yeah. Yeah, well, I just remember that comic, like, from about the age of, I don't know, 9 to 14 was always lying around, and, you know, same with Freak Brothers, you know, that was another big influence on me, too, for whatever, I mean, it doesn't really show, but it was just there, that sort of counterculture, you know, and I guess, like I said, getting back to what you said, I probably thought I was all punk and new wave, and was trying to, you know, but I wasn't anything like the character anyway, so. An outlet, maybe.
That was going to say, it was an outlet to...
Yeah.
Because
I went after C-Fox a lot.
I remember. Was it a cover Discorder where Wombat was walking along with a spray can and just spray-painted somebody in a fox shirt?
Yes, just took it out, spray-painted right over his logo, yeah. And I remember CITR loved that because they were always having... I don't know, is that still going, the feuds with C-Fox?
Are they still in the air?
C-Fox?
C-Fox?
I think they're finally playing Nirvana or something like that.
Yeah, no, yeah, it's really still pretty up. Bad.
Yeah, they're playing music from the early 90s now.
Yeah, about 15 years behind. Yeah.
But they were always, you know, you could tell they were obviously threatened by this crazy new music that CITR was playing at the time because they would just, like, lambaste them. You know, it's like, yeah, why don't you go back and play your REM records, losers? You know? And I'd be like, okay, we will. You know, like, enjoy your Eagles. You know?
Oh.
Ooh.
don't like the Eagles.
I just remember how it felt when I first heard REM being played on a classic rock station.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's I think that's where C-Fox is at now.
Is there any new rock stuff like Nickelback and stuff? I'm not a rock guy. I guess stop now.
Yeah, Nickelback.
Yeah, I think I've just threw up a little in my mouth. Yeah.
Oh.
Sorry for the smell, guys. Inkstead's the only show where we puke on air. And don't forget, for more puking on air, send donations. 822-1242.
That doesn't even make any sense.
I know. But it gave me an excuse to say the...
So if they send $100, will you actually puke on air?
I will. Okay. $100. I will Ralph on air. Not this week, because I don't want to, you know... Two weeks. Next week will be... We have a specialty show coming up that I don't want to puke during because I would embarrass myself vastly. Just like I would now if I puked myself in front of our distinguished guest. So, yeah, no puking. I'll just stop talking about
puking. So did Georgia Strait keep their promise? Did they let you do whatever you wanted?
Yeah. I mean, I never really laced it with full of swear words anyway, so I mean, I think I've slipped a few in there. I'm sure if I'd gone, you know, completely overboard, they would have... And a few times they did say, you know, BC Ferries is a bit concerned about the content of the strip. You know, they won't carry the Georgia Strait if you keep, you know, using the F word. And I said, I used it once, you know. So, and yet, you know, it's one of those weird double standards. It's like you can write an article, a rock critic can write an article saying that Nickelback, you know, F this, F, you know. And yet you use it in a comic and suddenly I think it's because they're still making the connection that this is obviously for children. You know, you've got a comic in the back of your paper, so that means kids are reading it. So
it's quite recently, are you an 8-ball reader?
Yeah.
I saw some Dan Clowes influence there, so I figured there must be a little Dan Clowes influence.
Yeah.
8-ball 22 recently was a teacher in the Eastern States. One of his students was new to the school and didn't read anything from the prepared list for the summer reading.
I heard about that. Yeah.
And the includes like Bukowski and like stuff where there's a lot of drinking and humping. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of everything. And so he gave Mateball 22, wonderful book. Or I guess it was the Ice Haven graphic novel. I can't remember either which. But there's a scene where there's breasts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And oh dear.
The teacher got fired.
Wow.
Well, not fired. He got please resign. Mm. And is the father of the student is freaking out and suing and all sorts of stuff, and it's quite, you know.
It's just amazing that one parent can get a guy fired or even called onto the hot seat. You know, one parent, big deal. Like, you know, that's it.
Obviously, he's never read Barf or Women or something like that. You know.
Yeah.
About 5 pages, and you'd be like, "Wow, that's a little different."
Well, I think they're just terrified of the danger of lawsuits.
Yeah, I guess so. Too much of that.
Yeah. Damn you, parents. I'm going to do a quick song break. What would you like me to play?
Yeah, try that one.
Okay, we're going to listen to Cootie Williams, the Sextet and Big Band, to the track Things Ain't What They Used to Be. This is Inkstuds on CITR 101.9. Our guest this week, Rod Philbrant. And do you have a website people can check out?
Yeah, Chowderhead Bazoo.
Chowderhead
Bazoo. You can just Google that. It's my de facto website.
And I will have it linked on the podcast later, inkstuds.com. And you can all check out inkstuds.com for all the information I've been mentioning on the air. And, we'll be back.
Thank you. baby don't love me.
CITR 101.9 FM. This is the Inkstud Show, the radio show where we talk about comics. Once again, remind you people that we are doing the funding drive. So call 604-822-1242 and you can have a selection of some wonderful graphic novels, including Peanuts, Shortcomings by Adrian Tomine, Bagel's Lucky Hat by Dave Cooper, Exit Wounds by Rutul Modan, and Spent by Joe Matt, Dogs and Water, Anders Nilsson, and Southern Cross by Lawrence Hyde. Donating is very important to CITR to kind of keep our standards up to par with the other stations. We don't do advertising. This is the only time we ever kind of go, hey, give us some money. Because, you know, we like to do the community stuff. Like, really, what other radio show can you hear an interview with Ralph Steadman? Definitely not on the Fox.
Fox.
Fox sucks.
Yeah.
Or Zed. Actually, I can't do Z95 anymore because they're finally gone. But I'll be happy to anyways. I'll kick that bloated corpse. And, yeah, you know, we are the station that'll play the neat stuff. And Inkstuds, you know, I've... Colin and I have had the fortune of talking to some of the greatest cartoonists out there so far. Joe Sacco, Chester Brown, sat in the chair you're sitting right now there, Ron.
Steadman was on the phone, though, wasn't
he? Yeah, unfortunately. I would have probably...
yeah, I would have been nervous anyway. You weren't nervous?
Oh, I was nervous. It was... luckily, he was drunk, I think.
Yeah, he sounded like... What was he, banging around in the kitchen there?
He was in his studio.
Oh, okay.
Was swatting a fly.
He was chasing a fly. That was
yeah, I was like, what the fuck? Yeah. Oh, and in case I do swear, or one of my guests swear... Well, Colin doesn't swear.
I do, too. I have done.
Okay, Colin swore once in 1983.
Hey.
And he did a mini comic about how bad he felt for swearing.
That was Chester Brown. That was Chester Brown's book.
Yeah, it was a wonderful book. I love you, Colin. I love to give you a hard time. Okay, Rod, back to you. Doing stuff with the Georgia Strait. So what did you have in mind when you started doing the comic strip?
Which one, Dry Shave or...
Let's start with Wombat.
Well, like I said, it was pretty much just, you know, new wave nonsense. It was a period where I went, you know, I guess everybody, when you're young, goes through that period of, like, you really like anti-humor.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, well, let's see how not funny I can be, and that's hilarious.
Like nihilistic...
Yeah. Well, I remember this strip, I probably won't pronounce the guy's name right. I think it was Revillo or Revilo. He's still around, but it was in the National Lampoon. And it was called Pigs in Love, and it was a huge influence on me. The first panel was two pigs in a clinch, and the male pig goes, "Give me some tongue, toots." And then it shows them making out, and then in the third panel and last panel, he just goes, "Thanks." And for some reason, that was like, you know, the way most people hear the Beatles or the Sex Pistols for the first time or something like that. Like, I just thought that was the funniest thing I'd ever seen.
It's so just kinda, that dry...
Yeah, just... the flat finality of this, just thanks. Like, you're expecting... It's the first time, I guess, I'd seen a comic that didn't have a punchline, you know? So I think I sort of basically stole that idea, anti-humor, for about 10 years.
10 years is how long it ran, eh?
Oh, no, not that long.
Okay.
But I was still mining that gold mine for a few years. And then with Dry Shave, I decided I wanted to actually try and be funny. I got more interested in... four panel gags as a structure.
Mm-hmm.
And just because I don't really read a lot of comics, but I love four panel gags, and I love Pogo and all of the guys who could just, you know, do a perfectly modulated four-panel gag, and I think that's why I still do it, is that I'm always trying to get that perfect four-panel gag. And Dry Shave was sort of like taking, you know, there's sort of like my life before Raymond Chandler and after, but then sort of marrying it with Spumco.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I also really got into Ren and Stimpy. Yeah, I got really into Ren and Stimpy, so I sort of changed my character design and got a bit more Looney Tunes too, but you know, influenced by, you know, I guess a lot of that 50s crap was just sort of just about to get big around that time, but, you know, cocktail parties and stag parties and stuff like that.
As some people hate to hear, kitsch.
Yeah, well, it's kind of been done to death now, yeah. But, you know.
I know if you ever say that word around Robert Dayton, he'll go into an angry
at the fury. Word kitsch, or?
Kitsch, just say kitsch around him.
Yeah.
I think we call it lowbrow now.
See, that phrase bugs me.
Oh?
That phrase, lowbrow, really bugs me, because I think it discredits people's work.
Well, they're kind of changing it now to pop surrealism, aren't they? That's kind of...
See, that's fun, because a lot of it is based on pop culture stuff, but lowbrow makes it sound like, you know, you're sitting there going, oh, this is going to be a good painting.
I think it's meant ironically.
I know, but it still doesn't work for me.
Well, it's sort of like calling, you know, at one point, the term outlaw artist or art maybe had some credence, but you know, now they'll put out a book on outlaw artists, and it's sort of like, I always think, well, what are they wanted by the cops? Call the cops then, you know,
on the land,
arrest these people. But no, I think it's because it's, you know, I don't know, they're doing tattoos in back alleys or something like that is what, you know, or they're on the run from the law, literally. But
yeah,
you know, now what makes them an outlaw exactly?
They're breaking the ideas of art.
That's it. Yeah,
challenging the institutions.
Yeah.
Now, Dry Shave, we're talking about the 50, kind of pre-50, or, you know, like pre-kitsch. I don't know. I don't know, like, saying that.
Well, it wasn't all about... Oh. It wasn't all about tiki parties and, you know, the stuff that, you know, most people think of with the 50s or the stuff that's around now. Like you know, tiki parties, there's a good example. You know, it wasn't all about that. There might be a touch of it, but I always tried to do something a little bit different with it because, you know, there's not really any humor inherent in just riffing on 50 stuff, so I was trying to do something. Like I said, it was just, you know, trying to be funny and usually failing, I think, but that was part of the fun, too. It's like...
It felt to me like a lot of... It was kind of like a crossover between, like, just the sheer depravity or just bottom out of, like, Bukowski mixed with, like pseudo-classiness of the Rat Pack.
Yeah, well, and trying to make it, you know, trying to make it funny because, you know, I would get that response a lot when I mailed it out. They would go, well, we don't get it. You're talking about junkies and whores and boozers and guys with knives, and it's supposed to be funny, you know? But it's like, I didn't really understand. Maybe I was sending it to the wrong places or something like that, because I was not sure why, you know, they would run something like, say, Underworld, but they wouldn't, you know, maybe Dry... They thought
because it's a cat.
Yeah, maybe that's it. They weren't, you know, they were people doing this stuff. I don't know.
Well, it's similar themes to what Tony Millionaire draws.
Yeah, but I mean, well, Tony Millionaire is Tony Millionaire, obviously. Good interview, by the way.
That Thanks. He was hungover as all hell.
Was he?
Oh, yeah.
Was he actually drinking at the time?
No, he was hungover. He drank. He was trying something new where he didn't eat the night before and just drank.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't work out so well for him because he got drunk real quick.
Yeah.
So, and actually, I met him a couple months after that, and... I don't even think he remembered doing the interview.
Well, that's good.
I introduced myself to him, and he's like, okay. Gave me that kind of look like I was some crazy guy coming up to him, like, okay, I'll just leave him alone. And then he actually listened to it again at some point and sent a message for it. That was great. That was funny. I'm like, okay.
Well, his matter-of-fact description of his drinking habits was pretty funny. He just asked, so what about the drinking? And then he just proceeded to break it down for you. Like, I used to drink way more. Like...
That's the thing I find a lot with the guys I talk to. They used to drink more, but not so much anymore.
Well, how old is he?
I think he's probably about 50.
He's got kids, right?
That'll do it.
Yeah, 45 or 50. I'm sorry if you're not that old, Tony. You're not aging well. I'll get in trouble for that one. Do you enjoy a good drink?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
What's your flavor of choice?
I pretty much only drink beer.
Okay.
So I'm actually kind of a lightweight. Again, I'm getting some vicarious thrills through my characters a lot of the time. I'd probably puke if I had a scotch on the rocks.
Spend a lot of time in bars watching people?
Yeah. that's not so much here, but when I lived in Seattle, that's one of the things I always credit for Dry Shave too, was I stopped doing Wombat and didn't really want to do another strip. And then I moved to Seattle, and I just love American bars. Like, you know, I still do. They're still out there. Not so much in Seattle. They're turning into these sort of airport loungy kind of crap joints. But that's you just walk in there, and, you know, you could plant yourself for a couple hours, too, and it's weak American piss. So yeah. You're not going to get wrecked.
No.
And I'll remember what I'm doing. But I would just, you know, I would, you know, literally take notes, be like, you know, three-panel gags walking around waiting for a punch, waiting for the fourth panel, you know?
Just now you like, just hope they don't walk up to you and see what you're doing and give you that punchline yourself.
No, I was able to somehow... American bars, they sort of respect people who want to just be left alone more than they do here. Here you're going to get some frat boy or some, you know, young 18-year-old bartender or something calling you dude, trying to make sure you're partying your head off or something like that. But that's another reason I like American bars, is that they just leave you alone and they're just there for the business of drinking, and the bartender's usually 150, you know, male
so
or female.
Suitably dreary and impersonal.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, it's like a movie.
Dreary.
You know? It's like a movie. It's like I can pretend I'm all hard-boiled just by watching this shit going on, you know, and it's like I said, this stuff writes itself. I mean, it's like literally walking into a movie. I've liked that ever since I first set foot in one in Seattle. It was called Ernie Steele's. You know? And it had no windows. It had one of those diamond door. That's the only, you know, smeary, yeah, smudged glass that you couldn't see in. So you go in there, and it's like you don't know what time of day it is when you come. You know, people, you know, that you wouldn't see here. I mean, maybe on the downtown east side, but those places are kind of barn-like, and they don't really have that same mojo that an American.
There used to be some good ones about 10 years ago on the east side, but it's not the same anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I used to like the Marine Club, but it still doesn't have quite the same feel, because it's kind of cavernous, you know.
It's gone, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. But it was as close as Vancouver had, at least downtown, I think, for a while.
I always enjoyed the, even though it was a little, it was actually really overpriced, was the sidebar, the Bosman's Motor Inn.
Yeah, that was a hangout. Yeah.
You know, where you'd go and they would lock the door at 2 a.m. and you would just leave when you want and keep drinking. And
well, when I started going there, that had a good American bar kind of feel. And it's like a lot of my American friends liked it too, not just because it was like home, but because it actually, you know, it's one of those things. It's like a certain vibe in the room where you start thinking anything could happen tonight.
Like, and that's just it. You'd go there and it would be like 3 a.m. and all of a sudden a fight breaks out between some old people.
Yeah. Or like a squad of cheerleaders come in for a drink, or, you know, high school reunion, or pirates, or, you know, who knows
pirates?
What, you know. Well, who knows, you know, a pilot convention, sumo wrestlers, you know.
Yeah, because it was one of the only real bars downtown in the downtown core that wasn't like you're going in there. It's not a gay bar, and it's not like a Granville bar. It was just a bar. You go in there.
Yeah, it's not a pickup joint, you know. Again, no guy behind the counter with a faux hawk.
Just Gino.
Calling you dude and calling the beers bad boys, you know. Just, you know. And that's, again, that's why I like American bars better.
My favorite thing in the sidebar, sorry to be going on about the sidebar, I miss it. It was a sad thing when it closed. The Velvet Monica.
Oh, yeah.
They had a Monica Lewinsky velvet painting.
That had been taken down for a while, though, I think.
People kept trying to steal it.
Yeah.
So they brought it out for the last night.
Yeah. I always wondered, though, I asked Gino, I said, well, how does anybody try to steal it? Like, wouldn't you notice them stealing a giant painting? Like, what do they do, shove it under their jacket? Like, you know, they grab it and run? Like...
Just drunk idiots in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I've been there, like, leaving at 5, so it was a good time. I'm getting a little sad. So Dry Shave, why did you stop doing Dry Shave?
I moved back here.
It was just...
There's really no material. Like, I mean, I was making... I can obviously make stuff up, but the sort of spark, you know, the it was just gone. It just, like, there's nothing really... There was nothing here to latch on to. There's, you know, there's no stories going on in these bars. So,
why relocate to Seattle and stuff, or am I going into personal area?
Yeah, it's a long, boring story full of intrigue and romance and crap.
Okay, we'll leave that one alone. Now, what's the? I can't remember the name of the strip you're doing right now.
Tar Paper Town.
Tar Paper Town.
Yeah,
there we go. And what's Tar Paper Town about?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Is it just basically whatever you feel is the
yeah pretty much it's ending up being more of a catch-all than Dry Shave was, but you know, I just pretty much do these things for my own enjoyment, you know, and if if I'm having fun with them, that's all I really care about. I you know, I'm sure you've talked to people. They work in a vacuum half the time.
Yeah.
You don't know. Oh, yeah. You know, I was doing dry shave. It wasn't even running in Seattle, and I was living there, so I had no idea if anybody was even reading it. I never get letters or anybody going nice. Once in a blue moon, maybe somebody goes, "Hey, that's a pretty good strip." You know, so I never know what's going on. So I decided a long time ago to really stop caring and just sort of, you know, do it for my own enjoyment. And once it stops being fun, I just move on to something else.
And ergo, Tar Paper Town.
Yeah.
You do have reoccurring characters.
Yeah.
In Tar.
Yeah, I mean, there's you know, obviously something going on there besides me just bitching about whatever's on, whatever's pissing me off that day.
Well,
that's always good, too.
Vancouver's a good city to bitch about right
yeah.
now.
Yeah, well, see, that happened with Tar Paper Town, too. It started getting away from the characters and more into, you know, things I hate about Vancouver.
So. Did you have a lot of enjoyment doing the Gordon Campbell cover?
Yeah. Yeah, I love drawing Gordon Campbell. I'm hoping that I'm still the, you know, anytime they need Gordon Campbell, they'll come to me, even if I'm, you know, 100 and he's still kicking around somewhere. Because I really like drawing Gordon Campbell.
You ever see him in person? He's got a weird face. Like, his, like, features are tiny. He's got this massive head.
Yeah.
But these little itty-bitty features.
He's got, like, a Coke nose. That's what it looks like to me.
But well, yeah, I've heard stories that he's a... Yeah.
Well, now he's kind of shaped like a lozenger, you know? He's, like, he's gotten even fatter. So I'm going to have to start revamping the caricature pretty soon.
But you don't do a lot of political work, do you?
No. Huh. No. I mean, I used to do some stuff on Van Der Zandt way back when.
He must have been fun to caricature.
Oh, yeah. Not as fun as Campbell for some reason, though. I think it's because it's easier to hate Van Der Zandt. He was such a cartoon character. But Gordon Campbell's just such a pill that, you know, any chance to kick him in his corncob teeth, you know, don't take it.
Van Der Zandt strikes me as kind of like the fool and...
He's just a clown.
That's just it.
American-style sort of loudmouth buffoon, you know, so you could sort of laugh at the guy. I mean, he was kind of evil. And
well, he was evil. He sued a cartoonist
for
defamation.
Yeah, Bob Bierman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did he win?
No.
Good. I think I can play another song. What would you like me to play? Messer Troops, Crazy Price, Monkey Safari. I think this is the right one. I can't remember now which CD was which. Let's hope so. time for another Inkstud spiel. Inkstud CITR 101.9 FM. The radio show where we talk about comics. Don't forget, people, we are doing the funding drive. Give us a call at 604-822-1242 and donate. You can donate $25. You can donate $45. You can donate $60. You can donate $101.90. Get it? 101.9. Okay, you guys don't have to laugh.
I'm drawn.
And just a reminder of the books we have available. We have Peanuts, Volume 1, by Mr. Schultz. Shortcomings, by Mr. Adrian Tolmanay. Bagel's Lucky Hat, by Dave Cooper, under the pen name of Hector Mumbly, which is a fabulous book. If you don't like Dave Cooper, something's wrong with you. You don't like him, Colin?
No, no, don't accuse me of that.
Well, the look on your face was like I accused you of something's wrong with you.
No, it just seemed kind of, I don't know, aggressive.
I am a little aggressive. Exit Wounds by Ruto Modan, whose name I'm probably horribly misspelling because she is Israeli, and I don't really know how people pronounce things in Hebrew?
Mm-hmm.
Yiddish? What's the language?
The official language, I believe, is Hebrew.
Hebrew, okay. Spent by Mr. Joe Matt, a wonderful graphic novel that took him many years to finish because he was too lazy doing other stuff.
Is that original or a collection?
Collection.
Ah.
It was issue 14, the last part of that took forever.
Okay.
But it's wonderful. He has one of the best, most gorgeous cartooning styles. I love his stuff. Anders Nilsson, probably the complete opposite of Joe Matt, with his very dry, beautiful, sad Dogs in Water. He has the most incredible hand for detail and penmanship. One of those guys who can just draw this incredible line. And last but not least, Southern Cross by Lawrence Hyde. All those books are excellent books. So give us a call, 604-822-1242. And also a reminder is on Saturday, October 20th, at the Student Union Theater here at the Sub Building at UBC, there will be some screenings of a couple of horror movies that the director is in town for. Shizuki Kanoke, Kanoko, I should say. Kaniko. And Norman England will be here for a question and answer for the 2:15 double screening of Idol and Death Note. And we have two double passes for the 2:15 screening and two double passes for the 11:30 screening, which is just Death Note. Give us a call here, 822-2487 in the studio. Or you can email me about it too, inkstuds@inkstuds.com. And I guess that's it for my spiels. I also have another thing. I'll have information on the website about on Saturday there's an open house for this group that's doing a work on working with immigrant youth, refugee and immigrant, on telling their story of their move to Canada. And it's quite interesting. Josue Minerva, who is another Georgia Strait guy, is already involved, as well as Rusty Beach and Julian Lawrence, who we're all friends with. And now I shall turn my head again. And welcome back, Rod. How you doing, Rod?
Good.
So, what's your love of men in barrels?
I have no idea, actually. I can't explain it. No,
it's just...
I just can't get enough of it. I don't know where it comes from. Again, probably some cartoon I'm not remembering as a kid or something like that. Although I did find a Sid Hoff cartoon with a guy in a barrel from, like, the 30s, I think. But I have no idea. It's just one of those archetypes that I'm sure there's got to be some huge segment of youth that don't even know what the hell that means.
The hobo anybody, tradition?
Yeah, would anybody know? I mean, maybe that's... Yeah. I think hobos are kind of back in with kids, aren't they?
Yeah.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
That's one step up.
You know, maybe...
It's a big thing in Halloween now.
You know what? I think that should be the next thing. Enough pirates, enough talk like a pirate. I think we've got to bring back the Depression-era hobos.
Well, I know that... You know Ape Lad? Is that his name? It's been on Drawn anyway. There's some site called 100 Hobos or 1,000 Hobos or something like that, and this guy invited cartoonists to, I guess it was like they'd post one a day, so there's millions of them.
Wow.
Yeah. So well, I don't know what the whole thing is, because I don't tend to look at a lot of stuff online, but it's it made it look like hobos were big again, so as far as I could tell.
Now, not only doing cartoons, but you also do a fair amount of painting and stuff like that.
Kinda.
What kind of do you kind of go for a different idea when you're doing your painting?
No, not really. I mean, I don't really know how to paint. It's basically just coloring. So, I mean, I've been in some shows, but I mean, cartoonists can easily make a crossover into lowbrow. So, you know, people invite you, so you do something for it. I mean, it's lots of cartoonists out. I mean, you do paintings yourself, right? So.
Oh, I'm in the pirate show every year.
Yeah, see.
And you're also in this year's pirate show as well,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, a few years, yeah.
A few years.
So your color, is that computer generated or?
No, it's just gouache.
Wow.
Yeah.
You get an amazingly smooth color.
That's gouache for you. I mean, it's a little practice and looks like you know what you're doing.
So you got some art school schooling before you got into the cartooning?
Yeah, I took a graphics, just an all-encompassing, you know, illustration design, graphic design. There's even some audio visual. I learned a little bit about animation, so that's maybe one reason I got into animation. But it was one of those things just in case I wasn't... I knew I wanted to be a cartoonist, but just in case nobody was going to pay me to draw, I thought, well, I can always, you know, do paste-up or design pizza menus or something like that,
which or
wouldn't be so bad, really.
Toy boxes.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's what I did for a couple of years anyway, yeah.
And it's been straight cartooning since?
Yep.
Nice. Now, what did you have in mind when you, went, okay, I want to do cartooning? Was it always gags, or was it other stuff that you have in mind, too?
Well, I think at one point I did think I'd probably do comic books, but I just never really got into the narrative form that much. And if I do, I tend to do it just in writing, so I don't know if I can't seem to make the two meet. And also, I don't do a lot of really autobiographical stuff like, look at me, I got up in the morning, I took a dump, haha. I don't really draw myself or do a lot of that stuff, mm-hmm. And that's not to say that doesn't have a place. It's just not my thing. I just don't know if I can make what I do in a day sound interesting or funny like some other guys can, you know, Julie Doucette or
the Joe Matt book I was describing, which
I mean he's a really good example. It's like I don't know how he manages to make that work, because if you take it on its surface it should be really boring. You know, I don't really care about how often he masturbates. But, you know,
12 times in a day.
A lot of people do, and that's fine. It's just I've never really been gone down that road, but like I said, that doesn't mean I think it's shit, just I don't do it. But what was your question?
Just what you had in mind when you were first going, okay, I want to do comics.
Oh yeah, well, pretty much what I'm doing, except that I thought it paid better, you know. I also, you know, really wanted to work in animation. Was another dream I had as a kid or as a college student.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, it happened. So I work in animation a lot too, and managed to sort of do illustration, do cartooning, and work in animation. And it's pretty much what I wanted, like I said, what I wanted to do. I just thought that, you know, people paid you decently to do it. You know, so.
Well, they probably pay better in animation than they do in cartooning.
Probably, yeah. Yeah.
Unfortunately. What's some stuff you're enjoying for comics?
Comics, yeah, see, I'm not that well versed in comics.
What's some stuff you have enjoyed?
8-Ball, obviously. No. Charles Burns.
It seemed like the Lloyd Llewellyn stuff really, probably spoke to you.
Well, actually, I didn't even know about the Lloyd Llewellyn stuff till after I'd been reading 8-Ball and then got the book, and I kind of was kind of amazed at the similarities myself. Like, the character has horn-rimmed glasses, you know, vintage suits, but I really didn't know about it. Honestly, and but then when I did see his work, I, you know, it was one of those things again. It's like there's before and after, and it was a big influence. But then I saw, you know, where he was getting it from, and I always sort of do that and go back and look mm-hmm. at Harvey Kurtzman, and you know, and Mad Magazine was obviously a big influence on, you know, millions of cartoonists. So I mean, that's always there.
Everyone loves Mad.
Yeah, but yeah, Mad was, you know, it's not really a comic, but that was a huge influence. Don Martin.
More of an institution.
Yeah. Don Martin, National Lampoon was, you know, that's the Gay and Wilson. Love Gay and Wilson stuff. Hergé.
Really?
Yeah.
I wouldn't see you as a Hergé fan. But
huge Hergé fan, yeah. Although, like I said, I don't think it shows up in my work, but that's fine. It's in there somewhere, right? And I know you're a big fan, too.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
I call him Lives and Breathes, Hergé. Yeah.
Well, still probably my favorite cartoonist of all time, next to maybe Chuck Jones or something like that.
Chuck Jones, marvelous stuff. No, your development and style. You kind of changed, I guess, from the more minimalist. Not minimalist, but, you know, how was it developing, like, different stuff and, like, working more with the gouache and stuff? Did you kind of have a lot of it self-taught after, like, learning new techniques and what works with what you're doing your art with?
Yeah, and just sort of seeing what other cartoonists were doing. And a friend of mine, who I ended up being friends with, Mark Zingarelli, I don't know if you know him, he's done some stuff for American Splendor.
Yeah, yeah.
He does a fairly realistic style.
Yeah.
He did a series on diners for one of the Seattle papers.
Yeah, Eating Out with Eddie.
Yeah.
And I got to know him when I lived in Seattle, and he was the one that told me to start doing my stuff in color, because he said, you know, you can't do black and white your whole life and expect magazines to pay you for it. So I just basically said, what do I do? You know, I don't know how to paint. So he just said, go buy some gouache and here's how you do it. And he basically gave me a 5-minute, you know,
tutorial.
Yeah, on the phone. And I said, sounds good. So, I mean, you know, as long as you can push a paintbrush around, you can do it.
Nice. I've heard many, much acclaim about your original pages from cartoonists in town who see, like, your original art and just like, how does he get that line? So.
Well, I do. I use brush and ink, which is, I switched to that after the crappy felts we were talking about. I didn't really think about it. Like, didn't really have an influence. Just sort of like, it's one of those things, I guess, if you do it a million times, you get better at it. But I think Klaus, his line was, you know, I know he uses a pen, I'm pretty sure. But that was, you know, I liked the way that looked. And Charles Burns, again,
mm-hmm.
you know, he's got a, well, his line is...
I think he just
beyond
pours,
impeccable.
He pours black in there and just does white, probably.
Yeah, yeah. He's obviously
eerie.
Insane.
Yeah. Yeah.
Eerily precise.
Yeah, it's kind of frightening, actually.
My favorite Charles Burns thing is Pete Bagg did this comic Sweatshop, which is about a kind of Garfield-esque cartoonist, and they go to a comic convention, and someone looks at a issue of Black Hole and pukes.
Again with the puking.
Yeah, it's not normally like that with us. You can ask Colin.
We're fairly clean usually,
I wouldn't say we're clean. We're running up near the end of our time. Now, you've got last week's cover. I haven't even seen this week's Georgia Strait. Will we see more Georgia Straits with you on the cover coming up?
Hopefully.
Yeah. How often are you on the cover?
I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 times a year.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I thought it was more than that.
No, well, they only do about 1 Gordon Campbell per year, I think, at this point. I think they should step it up myself. But.
It's you and Mark and kind of both share an aesthetic, I guess.
Pilon?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he tries to get me on there when he can. And
yeah.
He tries to get on there when he can.
Yeah.
I know there's some other people doing good stuff, too.
Yeah, he had a gallery in Gastown that you had a show at.
Yeah.
Moonbase.
Moonbase, yeah. Sadly missed.
Yes.
On that note,
oh,
sadness. Thank you very much. If people wanted to check out your stuff, they got the website. Thank you for the wonderful drawing in the Inkstead's guest book. And you have Dry Shave Collections people can find in some spots, aren't there?
The book, yeah. I mean, I guess best thing to do is look it up online.
Amazon?
Amazon or Anvil Press, the actual publisher.
Who've actually published a fair amount of nice local stuff.
Yeah. And I'm going to be self-publishing something probably pretty soon in the spring.
Will you make any appearances in any local book things or anything? Hawking your wares?
Not that I know of.
Well, there's always word on the street next year.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
At the library.
Yes. Well, hopefully it'll be indoors.
Yeah. That strike hasn't settled yet, so... Yeah. I don't even know what to say about the strike. Remember, 822-1242, Inkstuds. Thank you very much for listening, people. Donate money. I'll give you a quick rundown of the comics again that we have. Peanuts Volume 1, Shortcomings by Adrian Tomine, Bagel's Lucky Hat by Dave Cooper, Exit Wounds by Ruto Modan, and Spent by Joe Matt, Dogs and Water by Anders Nilsson, Southern Cross by Lawrence Hyde. Colin has to leave now because he has to get his bus.
I was going to wait till the end of the show.
He's got all his clothing on. He's got, which is rare because Colin actually usually does the show nude.
Without pants.
That's how we do it in the Inkstuds. Pantless. Next week's guest will be Jeet here and Chris Ware. Hopefully there's no tornadoes in Chicago this time.
We're going to be talking about Walton Skezik's, the early Gasoline Alley.
Wow.
Yeah, wonderful stuff. It's really gorgeous and highly recommend.
In.
Yeah, please do. Please listen and read the Walton Skezik stuff. It's gorgeous. And Week after, I think it'll be Brian Talbot. And, you know, I don't even really schedule next month. I guess I should. Adrian Tomine. I did an interview with Patrick Rosencrantz last night. They'll be airing at some point. Talking about Greg Irons, who's in town working on his Rand Holmes book, as we were talking about Rand Holmes earlier. And yada, yada, yada. Thanks, everyone. Crimes and Treasons up next.
Afterwards, less for minutes only. I'm okay. During, you kind of fill up my mind. It's just that before it lasts forever. It's just that before they just fuck my mind. I have these hands beating with love feet, and you're not here to touch. Sent you away. What else can I do when I need something that